Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny Lurie, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. On this Monday morning, the Warriors have won another game, moved to 59-14 by beating the Memphis Grizzlies 106-94. It was a fascinating game in a lot of different ways, and fortunately had a great person to talk to about it, my friend and frequent podcast partner, Nate Duncan of the Dunked On Basketball podcast. And since we sat next to each other at the game and then we decided to, well, we were already going to record a long podcast on Dunked On afterwards, he said, well, why don't we just do something for Locked On Warriors too? So the two of us go for a little bit over a half an hour on that game. He also watched Kevin Durant's pregame workout. And so we talk about that and just a couple of things that we're looking forward to in the eventful week to come. So lots of good stuff to listen to. I hope you really enjoy it. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Do you put your own intro on before? So is that why it's so abrupt?
I do. Yeah, I do.
Ah, okay. So yeah, so we on Dunked On, we try to do like seamless recording, like all one go. Because I hate having to go back. I just feel so weird talking by myself. I really try to avoid doing that, but you're better at that than I am.
That is one of the perks of doing Locked On Warriors this year, has been getting much more comfortable with that. But we should move on to the game itself. And I thought this was actually a really interesting game as it turned out. I mean, it had some kind of twists and turns to it. Final score was 106-94 for the Warriors. And one of the takeaways that I had from this game was that I thought in the first half, Memphis actually outplayed the Warriors, but the Warriors were making so many threes that it pushed the margin anyway.
That's interesting. Did they outplay them in the first half? Yeah, I think so. Memphis was getting a lot of shots at the rim and shooting very well, which most Warriors opponents do not. And Memphis shot poorly on threes. And as you mentioned, the Warriors shot it well, ended up shooting 17 out of 31 for the game on three-pointers, which was ridiculous. While Memphis went a mere 8 of 29 and Conley was 4 of 6. So that meant that everyone else made 4 out of 23, which is obviously horrible. I thought that was true. And Memphis really was also on their few mid-rangers that they're taking, hitting some tough shots there. And then the Warriors defense really picked up in the third, but Memphis still was making really tough shots and scoring well, and then they weren't able to sustain that into the fourth quarter.
Right. So there was an interesting shift that happened in the first quarter, in the first half, really. Kerr did more of the normal thing, you know, pulled Zaza for JaVale McGee, and then had the now normal second unit lineup that started the second quarter. And then in the third, Kerr went to Matt Barnes as the first sub for Pachulio, and so went small. And what I thought the biggest impact of that was is that it took Zach Randolph out of the part of defense that he does decently and put him more into defending in space. They used Barnes as the screener because that's where they put Randolph. And I thought he was surprisingly adept as a role man. That gave the Warriors a margin, but they actually didn't really hold that margin because once Conley got back in the game, Memphis went on a run. And so it was only 2 points going into the fourth quarter.
Yeah, it was 80-71. And then Memphis went on that run to close the third. The Warriors, as we've seen, are usually the ones closing out the third really strongly. And then, though, I thought the biggest portion of the game was when Conley had to go out. He usually rests twice during each half. And Andrew Harrison was absolutely miserable in this one. He ended up 1 for 8 in 18 minutes and was negative 11. And it's a little bit unfair to him because they just had no one else who could really do anything off the dribble except for him. So he kept having to try to create floaters or to finish at the rim, and he's a historically bad two-point shooter even in college for a draft prospect, and you know, against this Warriors defense, they had no chance really to be effective. And with the defense locking down, they were able to extend the lead and then finished it off really as Curry came in and hit a couple of buckets.
That also, beyond also the difference in capabilities and philosophies of the two teams. I mean, the Warriors ended up with a 30-11 fast break point margin, which is absolutely gigantic. And Memphis did outscore them in the paint and did outscore them on second chance points, but not by nearly enough to make up that margin.
Yeah, and considering the Warriors had 18 turnovers and Memphis had 11 steals, the 11 fast break points, not particularly impressive for Memphis. Memphis was able to punish the Warriors a little bit on the offensive glass. A lot of that was Tony Allen. That's a good way for him to make himself useful on the offensive end when he's not being guarded, to sneak in along the baseline and get some offensive rebounds. He had four. So he was able to hurt the Warriors in that respect, they only got 69% of defensive rebounds. But ultimately, I mean, this Memphis team without Marcus Gasol, who had a strained left foot, just didn't have the firepower to keep up. And that fourth quarter, when they only scored 13 points, is where that really made itself evident.
Yeah, that's an important part of this game, was also just them running out of steam. I mean, the Warriors offense did look better in the second half. Some of that was also that the second unit looked really disjointed at the beginning of the second quarter. They got better later on. Those two awkward David West turnovers that started the second quarter could have ended up being more significant, but you know, the Warriors ended up not only winning that quarter, but winning the game. And I don't know at this point what to make of how that unit has done. I mean, it's certainly, it seems like it's really helped Sean Livingston. Actually, the biggest impact that I've seen of shifting around the guard rotation has been helping him, because I don't think the Warriors are going to use that many minutes without Draymond and Curry and presumably Durant, if assuming he comes back, to be on the floor, to be off the floor at the same time.
Well, that leads into one of my big takeaways. I thought in the first half that switching that up, having, because they used to go with like the David West and then a bunch of length and switch everything defensively as a good defensive unit, but just really didn't have the spacing with Barnes, Livingston, Iguodala before he turned into a flamethrower. West isn't a three-point shooter either, so they really only had one guy, that would be Clay usually, who could shoot threes very effectively in that lineup. So then they switched up, they went with Ian Clark, had plenty of ball handling, and put Livingston, gave him those minutes next to Curry, but because really Livingston with more offense on that second unit with Clay out there, or it had been Durant at times earlier in the year, they didn't really need his number one thing, which is creating a shot in the post against a smaller defender. And so with that being the case, his skills were kind of wasted. Now putting him in with Curry, he's able to go to work a little bit more because they have more spacing and more scoring. And just as soon as we had said, hey, this really worked out so much better, because you remember those first couple of games when Durant was out, the rotation was really in chaos, and they had that Celtics game where Clay and Draymond both had to go out of the game, and they lost the game during that period in the middle of the fourth quarter. Kerr was able to fix that. And then just as soon as we were saying, hey, this is really working well, then they completely changed up in the second half. And I thought that's really my most interesting takeaway going forward, was the way the minutes were distributed in the second half.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I hadn't focused on that in my head, but you're certainly right that if we're taking lessons from it, that it was interesting. And also for me, a note along those same lines is Kerr's willingness to go to Barnes and go Draymond at center in that early in that second half and see how it worked out. And while the Grizzlies ended up cutting the lead, that wasn't with those same lineups on the floor.
Right. Yeah. So, and that Draymond at center unit was effective, and then they gave up a bunch of points right at the end of the quarter, but Draymond actually played the entire third for those who right. didn't see the game. And you mentioned Barnes was subbed in pretty early on for Pachulia. And then Draymond played center for almost like an 8-minute period, I think, in that third quarter with Barnes next to him at the four. They brought Iguodala in as well shortly thereafter, took out McCaw. Pachulia and McCaw both got the Keith Bogans start the game and then never come back in both halves. But I thought that was interesting because they went with that was the longest I think they've gone continuously with Draymond at center all year. And then Kerr was going to bring in David West. There just wasn't a stoppage for the last minute and 30 seconds of the third. And then David West actually played nearly the entire fourth quarter. They never went back to Pachulia. I think West in most matchups is actually really their best big man at the center. JaVale McGee didn't play at all in the second half. And so it was really it seemed closer to what a playoff rotation would be like without Kevin Durant. And then we'll see how KD would get integrated. I assume he would just get a lot of the Barnes minutes, but that they would go in somewhat similar fashion to that. And then they had Klay in to start the fourth, no Draymond to start the fourth, which is what they had been doing.
Right. And I thought that lineup looked reasonably good together. They did benefit from a few Memphis misses that I thought certainly could have gone in. I think Conley missed at least one layup that was, it was reasonably well contested, but the Warriors are trying all this stuff out. And one of the kind of through lines that I've used, because I wrote this piece, I think it was back in December, about the idea that if you took out the Warriors, like big six, so the four All-Stars and then Livingston and Iguodala, if you go to this kind of standard playoff average for the other guys, for those six, there were really only about 40 minutes left for everyone else. And I think that 40 has increased because I think you want to give Livingston a little less than before. We'll see with Iguodala. But what David West has shown is that he definitely deserves a portion of those minutes. And maybe those come from Pachulia. You could do it in a couple different ways. But you brought up the idea of JaVale. I mean, like, I kept on thinking during this game, and yeah, Memphis's big man rotation, even in this game, was different than most teams. But like, you keep on looking at a big man for them and going, oh, wow, that's not a good fit for JaVale McGee.
Yeah, I mean, Zebo is always going to, any kind of good post-up center is usually going to kill JaVale. And any kind of good shooting center is probably going to kill JaVale too. But he's done enough offensively of late to really stay on the floor. But if he's not just killing it offensively on the glass and getting some alley-oops, then he really is, you know, as we've talked about many times, a massive defensive liability. It would be very interesting to me to see whether, I mean, you have to imagine that when KD comes back, and we can talk about how he looked pregame. I watched him a lot pregame. When KD comes back, McCaw will just be completely out of the rotation, I would imagine. They'll give a few minutes to Clark to start the fourth. And it'll also be interesting to see, because now is KD going to be in the game at the start of the second and fourth now, or is he going to, you know, are they going to go back to the exact same rotation they had before? Like a lot of that will be really interesting for Kerr to sort out. And then also a lot of it'll will depend on what kind of player KD is. Is he just going to kind of be more spotting up, playing some D, or is he going to be, you know, really a central part of the offense right away too? So a lot of that remains to be decided, but I think the West versus Zaza component, and Zaza was just horrible finishing again. It's really been a massive problem for him. And then, you know, who's going to get some of those backup minutes? I mean, it's going to be Barnes or Clark, I think, will be a decision that Kerr is going to have to end up making. You know, if you assume that McCaw is not going to get any of those minutes, Livingston will get thrown into that category too. So whether it's going to be Livingston, Barnes, Clark, I think is going to be one of the bigger decisions that Kerr will have to make when he really gets down to the playoffs. And then also, how much is it going to be Green at center as well? I thought the fact that he went that way for so long was encouraging, that I think he does want to get back to that more in the playoffs.
Right. One of the fundamental differences between this year's team and last year's team is that it's pretty unambiguous this year that their best five-man lineup, assuming Durant is healthy, and maybe even not assuming Durant is healthy, is with Draymond at center. And especially that's their best defensive lineup because he's so much more versatile and because they don't have Andrew Bogut and Festus Ezeli, who both had their own strengths on that end, that Pachulia, you know, he's been a lot better than he started the season when this was a big concern. But that idea, you know, Kerr had the safety blanket that he always kept on going back to centers last year, and that's still something that's in the back of my mind. But the idea that the Warriors play at their best with Draymond at center was readily apparent in this game too.
Yeah, I thought so, though. Again, the Memphis had that crazy comeback in part because Mike Conley was just fantastic for Memphis, just creating basically ISO jumpers or just like tough jumpers out of the pick and roll. Really a fantastic performance from him. We also would be remiss if we don't discuss really the star of the game we've barely mentioned yet, and that was Klay Thompson.
Yeah, Klay, especially at the beginning of the fourth quarter, that was the time that stood out to me where he just basically said, give me the ball, I'm going to take the shot, and they went in a lot. And that offensive unit...
Tony Allen was out of the game during that period when he really started heating up. That was key.
Yeah, so he ended the game, just so we have it out there, 31 points, 12 of 18 from the field, 7 of 11 from 3, which is ridiculous. And then also, not a big criticism, but a standard Klay Thompson line of 2 rebounds, 1 assist, 0 steals, 1 turnover, no blocks.
And no free throws either, which makes the 31 points on 18 shooting possessions all the more impressive. And by the way, a quick aside, I've been watching a little college basketball. You've probably been watching more than me. How great was it to just watch a game with only 15 free throw attempts on each side?
Yeah. the Warriors starting five only attempted 4 free throws in this entire game.
Yeah. And those were by Draymond. The Gonzaga West Virginia game had 28 fouls in 20 minutes in the first half. I mean, I did the math on it once, and in college basketball, basically your average game has 50% more stoppages per minute between fouls, TV timeouts, etc., than an NBA game does. So a big reason why I enjoy the NBA a little bit more. What else did you have from this? Let me go through my notes.
I thought that it was interesting to me that a lot of the post-game praise, and I'm not criticizing the people who did this, was on Andre Iguodala, because he looked good for stretches. Like, there were certain things he did well, but I think a lot of it was just that he got more looks in transition and finished those, did a nice job there, and he was two of two from three. Like, I didn't think that he exerted his will as much on this game as, like, Klay Thompson did, but he did do it at moments that had some resonance in terms of the outcome.
I mean, he had 20 points on 10 shooting possessions.
That's true.
That's pretty awesome. 4 assists, 2 steals. He had a key strip of Vince Carter late as the Grizzlies were trying to come back, and then he kind of looked at his left hand. Some of this miming that, like, the Warriors have been doing of their own moves. Like, Steph had a play where he came down, came to a 2-foot jump stop, pump faked someone out of the way, and then scored. And then he was just like miming that move as he went back down the floor. Like, when someone does a Euro step, you'll see like the whole bench doing like this pantomime Euro step after they score. It's a fun little thing that the bench does when they're trying to enjoy things. But to me, the biggest difference that I've seen with Iguodala, who played 32 minutes again, I think he played like 16, 17, 18 straight minutes. Because he never came out in the second half, right? Until maybe the very end?
I don't think so, no.
Yeah. When he gets the ball on a rebound or an outlet, he is pushing it absolutely as hard as he can every time. I think that, and Draymond does that too some, but Iguodala in particular, he's just pushes really hard and puts a ton of pressure on the defense. Like, and you remember the one play where he got that dunk. He pushed it hard. Curry was actually trailing the play. Mike Conley was kind of already had the ball, but was kind of thinking about, all right, I got to go get Curry. And then Iguodala kind of hesitated, made it look like he was going to throw it back to Curry, and then just exploded to the rim for a dunk. So I think the way he's been pushing the ball, I mean, that 30 fast break points is outstanding against a Memphis team that really avoids giving those up a lot. That's what's really stood out to me. Since he's really started this great stretch that's coincided with Durant being out.
Yeah, he's really played fabulously, and you worry a little bit about putting some excess miles, not only in terms of the actual minutes, but just in terms of the intensity of the minutes. He's certainly picked that up during this time, but he knows his body really well at this point, and if he feels comfortable with it, then, I mean, you just kind of have to roll with it. And something else I wanted to talk about briefly, this is, you know, a Warrior-centric podcast, is there are so many guys that I really like on Memphis. It's just that they especially without Marc Gasol in this game, but they just don't have enough around it to make all of those other parts sing.
And they really need like a Jordan Crawford type off their bench who can just create some shots, you know, and even if they're inefficient. I mean, when Conley was out of the game, I mean, they just did not have anywhere to go offensively, especially against a team like the Warriors that's just going to switch anything. And, you know, they already don't have anyone who can create off of a normal pick and roll very well. Now when you're switching and you have to go one-on-one, they really just have nothing. And normally what they'll do is they run everything through Zach Randolph, who again hasn't been particularly efficient, but at least can like draw some double teams. You know, if your bench unit is going to have a 500 true shooting, at least he can create something for you and not turn it over. But now with Randolph starting, he wasn't in the game, and Conley was out, and so they had nowhere to go at all. So How do you feel about a potential matchup? I mean, it's looking less and less likely. Memphis in the seventh seed right now, but the Warriors starting to look more likely they're going to get the one seed, although if they lose these next two games, that could be in jeopardy. But how would you feel about a Warriors-Memphis matchup at this point?
It feels to me like a hard-fought six-game series where you don't necessarily expect that the Grizzlies will win it outright, but that a lot of the games are close. Kind of similar in a way to the series that they had in 2015, except maybe Memphis doesn't win 2 and 3. Maybe they split those. Or they split those would be the way it would go. They make games really hard, but I just don't think they have the firepower. Like, this is actually an argument you and I had, but we were actually, I think, on the same side of it about a theoretical Spurs-Warriors matchup last year, which never materialized, they can defend well, but can they produce enough offense to actually win games reliably against the Warriors?
Yeah, that really, especially among all the playoff contenders, even without Kevin Durant, I think the Warriors by far have the best defense. And the most versatile defense as well, with the fewest holes. You know, even if San Antonio is a little bit better statistically, I think that San Antonio still has a lot more weak points that can be attacked with some of their bigs and Tony Parker. So, I mean, I guess this is where I wanted to go with that is, does Golden State look like pretty much as good now that, you know, they've got on this winning streak, which granted is not against the greatest competition, but if you compare the way they played in this recent win streak to how they played without Harrison Barnes early on last year when they were still, you know, in that 24 game win streak for a lot of it, do you think they look like pretty much the same team now that they've kind of settled back in? Are they as good?
If you account for or just acknowledge the difference in defensive intensity in the first three quarters, it's not that different. I mean, so last year, they were gunning from the jump almost every game. Like, they cared so much more about that. But this team, without Durant at their best when they're engaged, yeah, it's actually very similar. And Barnes has helped with that. The ball movement's good.
Matt Barnes has helped with that, yeah.
Yes, Matt Barnes, sorry. Yeah, forgot about that part of it. Curry isn't what he was last year. You know, I always thought that was kind of an unfair bar for him this year. And I'm going to be very interested to see if he starts to get closer to 14, 15 overall numbers later on. But yeah, I mean, if you're looking at the structure of the team, it's not that different from that stretch where they kind of scrambled through it reasonably well.
Yeah, and maybe the 14, 15 comparison is a little bit better because I think Curry is much closer to that player than, you know, the ridiculous numbers that he was putting up for a lot of last season. What about this one? Which I wish we had a chance to talk about before, but let's say Kevin Durant just doesn't come back this year for whatever, which I don't think will happen, but would you still make Golden State the title favorites?
I would have the Spurs over them because I just trust their perimeter defenders. Like, because then you can sick Kawhi and Danny Green on Steph and Clay. You can do a lot of different stuff there. I think that could work out, but I think that would be a very hard-fought series. And if the Warriors had home court in it, I could certainly see it going seven.
Yeah, I mean, I still think that Cleveland would be a bigger issue for the Warriors than the Spurs in that scenario. But
yeah, I think through it in order. That's just the way I kind of go. Yeah. Well, yeah, so I wanted to ask you, you tied in, I mean, you could, of course, talk about that question as long as you want, but also just because I actually wasn't there before the game to see Durant today. So if you could share not only with the listeners, but also with me as somebody who wasn't there, how he looked for what you saw.
He looked pretty good. And, you know, just watching him, he didn't look like a guy who's too injured. He's got like a big knee brace on. I think he's probably going to have to wear that for the rest of the year, at least if the history of other players who've had grade 2 MCL strains is any indication. You know, so he's got like the brace, he's got a sleeve on top of that, just the same as like Briante Weber did when he was playing, if you remember kind of what that looked like. But he was able to go in and dunk off of 1 foot off his left leg. That's his jumping leg. He's able to shoot 1 foot fadeaways off that leg as well. Doing a pretty hard workout, just, you know, kind of coming off screens, planting, pulling up. Looked pretty good doing some dunks as well. Didn't see him really doing any side-to-side slides. I think that is going to be one of the bigger things because your MCL is on the inside of the leg, and so sliding from side to side, changing direction defensively, I think is something that could be difficult for him. And then he ran a few sprints afterwards as well at half court, looked fine doing that. So he definitely looks like he's getting closer. And, you know, if it were game seven of the finals, maybe he'd even try and play now. But I think they're going to, of course, really try to ease him back into it because they have that luxury. So very encouraging for where he's at. But of course, there's a question of how's he going to react to having that brace on? Is it going to be comfortable for him? Is he going to have confidence in that? Is he going to have his rhythm in game speed? You know, it's going to take him a while to get back into game shape. There's all of those. But just in terms of like, he looked as good as you could have expected, given how recent the injury was.
That makes sense. Yeah, I saw a little bit of him. I think that was last game, and it wasn't as thorough a workout at that point. But yeah, I think that ties in. And so the last thing I wanted to really, and we don't have to talk about this very long, that I was thinking about before the game, I don't even know if I brought this up to you, is the idea of a magic number. So a magic number is used in baseball as the kind of the combination of the, usually it's the leading team's wins and the second place team's losses that are necessary to clinch something. And the number that was in my head was a magic number of 2. And what that meant was what would change the dynamic for the Warriors-Spurs game, which is on Wednesday. And so that would be a combination of Warriors wins and Spurs losses before that game. So I was thinking if the Warriors basically win their 2, or if the Spurs lose their game in Cleveland on Monday, that just kind of changes the dynamic a little bit. Oh, yeah, you're right. It is at home. Yeah. But so like I felt like that would be enough to really like establish a lead and kind of change the dynamic a little bit. Or do you think that both teams are just going to go full bore no matter what?
Well, Kerr has already announced before the game that he's going to play those guys, everybody on those back-to-back, Houston on Tuesday and the Spurs on Wednesday. And he damn well better play him because we're doing the Twitter NBA show second screen on Wednesday. They already kind of screwed us out of that when he rested the guys, which obviously is looking like a great decision since they haven't lost since then. But yeah, I don't think it's really going to change much. I think that Greg Popovich is going to want to see how they size up a little bit. Popovich also has actually been playing more lineups lately with Kawhi Leonard at the 4. Maybe he's going to want to try those out a little bit against Golden State. I mean, they've played one competitive game with each other this year, and it was the first game of the year. So much has changed since then. And I think if I were a coach, I think when you're more focused in some ways on your team than the other team, you want to your team to get experience playing against the team that you might match up with in the West Finals, as opposed to this concern of, oh, well, we don't want them to get comfortable with us. I mean, in reality, this Warriors team has been together for a lot longer and playing against the Spurs more than the Spurs team has. They got Gasol, they got David Lee. He's going to want to find out whether those guys can really stay on the floor. Dwayne Dedmon is new as well. John Simmons wasn't in the rotation last year. So I think the Spurs really have more to gain and to learn than this Warriors team does. So if I were Pop, I would absolutely want to play and see how we did and what we have to work on.
That's a good point. And also, neither of these teams, just with their experience and everything else, has that issue of worrying about losing the mental edge. So there are certain circumstances where I can actually see credibly the argument where if you go full bore and you lose, that, you know, maybe that could be a problem of, oh, maybe we can't beat these guys. But A, both these teams have won championships, and B, both these teams have won big games in, like, against the other, in the other team's building. Like, all of those things have already happened. So this isn't going to be a blow or a boost to the psyche very much at this point. I mean, I guess if the Warriors
I think the way Pop thinks is he would rather, and maybe even Kerr would too, he would rather almost like that they lose and say, hey, we got to shore some things up here. This is what we have to improve, you know, as kind of a shock to the system.
That's true. Teachable moment. Anything else you feel is like a mandatory part of the story of this game?
I think that Tony Allen, despite his offensive problems, is still a player who is very frustrating for Golden State. He just shows up in places where he is not expected. Steph Curry threw a couple of passes that were just like, oh, I can just throw this pass because this pass is always there. And like, no, actually, when Tony Allen's on the floor, he has to kind of check and make sure that it's open, and or he's going to get a steal and make you look really bad. And, you know, he's great at stripping guys. He had a great play where he just got through a screen and Klay Thompson thought he would be wide open for a jumper, and he closed and stripped it from him. And he still is just not only a great defensive player, but he's great in ways that just you don't expect for anyone else in the league. Actually, like Pat McCaw has a little bit of that in his game for just showing up, sniffing stuff out, but he doesn't have the physical tools that Tony Allen still at 35 has, or the strength that he has. So he's still a difficult matchup. I'm sure that they eventually will figure him out as they did, but he's a guy that kind of takes some getting used to playing against.
That actually ties in with something I feel like I haven't talked about enough, and it's weird because I generally advocate for teams being a little bit more assertive, but at certain points, it would be better if the Warriors pulled back a little bit on their own reins and basically said, we don't have to make the crazy pass because we're better than the other team. There is this idea that if you have superior talent, you can actually be a little bit more conservative. That's not in the Warriors' DNA. Curry and Draymond. Draymond throws a lot of these really ambitious passes.
Yeah, he and West both threw some like passes that are just like just backdoor passes that just clearly were not there tonight.
Yeah, like West threw one to Ian Clark and there was no chance. Like it was a 0% pass because it's usually like a 65-70% pass. And the Warriors don't need that to have a sustainable offense. They can score on almost anybody anyway.
No, I agree with you, but these guys also really enjoy having fun playing basketball, and right, trying those types of things is what can make it fun sometimes.
Right, but I agree with that, but The problem is that this ties in sometimes with some other things that we talk about when games get better, is that the teams that happen to sniff those out are often the teams that you play late in the year, like the teams that are in the NBA finals and the conference finals. The Spurs, like Kawhi, can sniff a lot of those out too. And, you know, Tony Allen isn't the Grizzlies are a very good team. I don't think the Grizzlies are going to be in the conference finals waiting for the Warriors, but it's just something that happens. LeBron, I think, had a few nice ones of those. So just you don't want to kind of add that doubt into the thought process. But if there's a way of adding a little bit of like feeling self-conscious about it, I think it would help.
Well, one thing, you remember that first Warriors Spurs game last year when I think it was like, you know, for that point in the season, the fewest losses of any two teams that ever played each other. And the Warriors like blew the Spurs out by 30. It was one of the greatest exhibitions of basketball I had ever seen in the regular season. And a big part of how they did that was by going backdoor really hard and then just throwing some unbelievable passes, like Draymond Green in particular was ridiculous. And those backdoor plays are going to be critical against the Spurs, because one of the things that they really like to do defensively is to get up, deny passes on the wings, and prevent you from running your offense. And the way you beat that is by hard backdoor cuts. That's something that the Warriors excel at. And so they're going to have that part of their game on if they're going to be successful against the Spurs, because the Spurs really do not allow them teams to reverse the ball. I watched them play Minnesota a couple of days ago, and they just in the third quarter of that game just took Minnesota completely out of everything they were trying to run by denying passes on the wings. And so that's something that the Warriors are going to have to be successful at against San Antonio.
It's a great point. Anything else? I think we're about done.
I've droned on for long enough. Let's record my show now.
Sounds good. Thanks again to Nate Duncan for taking the time to come on. You can listen to him on the Dunked On Basketball podcast. We released one this morning that is on the top 10 players in the NBA. As you could guess, there are Warriors that feature prominently in that. And then we record, you know, that show typically 4 or 5 days a week. This week it'll be 5. And then we're also doing the Twitter NBA show Second Screen, which is the one where we do live commentary. You can turn down the volume and listen to us for Warrior Spurs on Wednesday, assuming the teams don't tank it by resting all their guys again, which we were going to do the last one, but then the circumstances foiled that. So we'll be doing that again on Wednesday. You can check that out. And Nate is one of the single best follows on Twitter, maybe the single best one in terms of in-game analysis, Nate Duncan NBA, NateDuncanNBA. And just like Dunked On, which we do together, and this show, there are a lot of different ways that you can support it. You can subscribe and download every episode, whether you listen to it or not, because downloads are still a very important part of this world for advertisers. And you can also leave a rating, leave a review in the podcast player of your choosing. That is a great thing to do. And I also wanted to take a second to thank everybody, because over the weekend, we hit a very, very cool threshold for me. And that is that we crossed the 750,000 listens for Locked On Warriors. And considering I started the show later than just about all of the other members of the wonderful Locked On family, it's amazing to reach that. I have a private goal in mind, which we have not yet reached, but it 750,000, over 750,000 now is really incredible. So I thank all of you who have listened, all of you who have spread the word, and it means so much to me. And to make this, you know, a project that has, of course, relied on a lot of other people's support, but this is more of a solo thing than any of my other, audio adventures, because some of the episodes are just me yammering on by myself. So I really do appreciate that. As usual, any feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com, @DannyLarue on Twitter. If you take the time to write it, I will take the time to read it. I do not promise to take the time to respond. I do not have enough time. So that is enough for now. This is actually a very unusual tease, but it is very, very possible, maybe even likely, that tomorrow's Locked On Warriors will come out a little bit later in the day. And there is a very specific reason for that, and it is a very exciting reason for me for personal reasons, and I think eventually it will be exciting for many of you listeners as well. So that is quite the tease, and I will explain at that moment, whenever that podcast comes out, exactly why it is coming out. But it is something very, very different and something that is extremely exciting to me. So that's enough of a tease for now. That will be at some point on Tuesday, whether it is early, whether it is late, and that, you know, and then of course there will be a Tuesday post Rockets podcast as well. So the hope would be at the bare minimum that the other one will be Tuesday, maybe for your afternoon evening commute, and then the Rockets one will of course be up. But yeah, that's all going forward. So that's enough for that for now. I hope you really enjoyed listening to Nate and I talk. It was an enjoyable experience, and be back at whatever time that one's ready to go.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.